Yeah, we did that. Okay, first point, that's right. Varnashram review we did. Okay, that was from the previous class. That was not exactly from the last class. Then? Okay, good. Here I got the first answer. We did Jnana Yoga. Those are verses from which chapter?
Second.
11 to 20. And what is Jnana Yoga talking about?
Soul.
About soul. It's our basic philosophy. We are not the body. We are the spirit soul, and we bend over so many. We sense the characteristics, and we can fill the soul with different kinds of weapons and all those kinds of things. So that was Jnana. And what was Jnana meant for? Why Krishna presented Jnana there?
Compassion.
Exactly, to defeat Arjun's compassion argument. Okay, after that what did we do?
Karmakanda.
Exactly, not Bhakti Yoga, straight away. Karmakanda. Karmakanda roughly from? Alright, that's good. And in Karmakanda, what is the point? Alright. Okay, if by doing prescribed duty, one can? Enjoy. So by feeling angry, Arjun can?
He can enjoy
the
heavenly
planets,
so there's no problem with that.
And after that? Bhakti Yoga. And what is the key point? What is the key point of Bhakti Yoga? Okay, any such Kamkarma Yoga, that's fine. But, is that all? What is the beauty? What is the glory of Bhakti Yoga?
No,
there is no loss or diminution in the path of bhakti. Okay, that is one key point that we discussed. And then we went on till 47. And 47 was Karmanya Vajigara server. So where we finished that. And we actually, in the summary, we covered up till 53.
Can we do Sutta?
So the correct is now that is from 54. That is from 54. Okay, so let's have. Alright, so this was pretty much the summary of last week. Clear? So this is compassion, enjoyment and sinful reaction. That is Bhakti Yoga. Krishna says that is by performing Bhakti Yoga, there is no Krishna sinful reaction. One will not be afflicted by any kind of sinful reaction. So that's the reason Bhakti Yoga was presented or Buddhi Yoga was presented. Now, from there, we are straight away going to something else. That is, starting from verse 54 onwards. So in 54, Arjun starts asking some questions, and those questions are very important. And we can see, if there are transcendentalists, if there are great devotees, how can we know them? How can we understand who is a liberated soul and who is not a liberated soul? So today's discussion is based on this topic. That is, how can we understand who is a self-realized soul and who is not a self-realized soul? So, because if we go to different parts of the world, we can see so many kinds of yogis. And these yogis have so many kinds of siddhis. They can perform different kinds of wonderful activities. And how can we identify who is a real self-realized person and who is not a self-realized person? Because some yogis can produce ashes, some yogis can produce gold, some yogis can read your mind perfectly. Even in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's time, he could read actually. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was a great devotee. His mind, this particular yogi could read. I remember another so-called yogi, in his biography he has written, he went to see one yogi, he was famous for reading the mind. So this particular person, he think about a verse, and the yogi immediately wrote the verse and gave it him. This is the verse you are thinking about. So mind reading is possible. So there are different skills that people have. From which, how can we identify who is a real yogi or not? Okay, we will get to that so we can answer them. So we will go step by step. And some yogis can produce fire from the mouth. Fire from the mouth. That's pretty good. Even in the Himalayas, when it is freezing, I have one autobiography I was reading. He was telling, he was walking around in Himalayas and he saw this person, when he, like that, the fire is coming up. That goes for, you know, a few meters. So, this is really amazing. You have a question?
No.
No, okay, then it's fine. That's really amazing. So then people get really confused. How can you understand who is a yogi and who is not a yogi? That's the reason Arjun is asking a question for us. That is, what are the symptoms of a self-realized soul or a liberated soul? So this is the question of verse 54. In 54, actually, Arjun is asking a few questions. That is, Sita Prajna, Ka Bhasha, Samathita Sasya, Keshava. That is, what is his language? Stitajat, Kim Prakasheta, Kim Asita, Rajeta Kim. So, how he speaks, how he walks, and how he sits. So, these are the questions. So, the questions are a little cryptic. Means, it doesn't mean exactly literal meaning. It means a little different. We have to actually interpret the meaning of the question. And that we don't have to actually interpret, but the acharyas have already interpreted or given out the right meaning. So we have to just follow. So the first question is, what are the symptoms of a self-realized soul? And which verse actually gives answer to this question?
54.
Exactly, 54. In one verse, the answer to this question is very clearly mentioned. What are the symptoms? So, the first part is Prajahita. He actually gives up all desires for sense gratification. So, in this regard, Prabhupada makes, or in this verse, the text makes a very important point that all the desires of sense gratification is coming from the mind, from the mental speculation, from the mental concoction. So that is the source of all the desires of sense gratification. So Srila Prabhupada actually quotes or writes the meaning of one verse from Srimad Bhagavatam in the purport. That verse is very famous. It is called Yasyasti Bhakti Bhagavat Yakinchana. The meaning of the verse is, a devotee has all the qualities of the demigods. So demigods have all good qualities, and a devotee has all the qualities of demigods. However, a non-devotee, he doesn't have any good quality. There is no good quality for a materialistic person. It doesn't say one person good quality, it said no good quality. And there is a reason, because the last line of that verse from Bhagavatam is Manorathena Dhavato Bahi. Manorathena means he is hovering on the mental platform. Hovering on the mental platform means all his decisions are based on what is good for me, for my sense gratification. What is not good for me. This is a plane in which he is working. It is like, if we analyze our mind, you had a question?
What do you think are good qualities here?
Good qualities?
Yeah. For materialistic people, some people, even the materialistic, some people do charity work, it's also a good quality, right?
Apparently it is a good quality. Apparently it is a good quality. But the point there it is made is, even if he has such a good quality of doing charity, but if you consider the time span, he cannot maintain in goodness for a long time. Why he is doing good charitable work, for instance? Because he is in the mode of, or predominantly at that point, in the mode of goodness. Okay? If somebody is in the mode of goodness, one cannot maintain goodness for a long time because the modes are competing. The mode of passion, the mode of ignorance, and the mode of goodness, they are competing each other. So at one point, the goodness is succeeding and he is in the mode of charity, he is performing charity, but at the next point he is forced, he is impelled by the modes of material nature to act in a sinful way. So it is said it is not possible. One cannot stably remain in the mode of goodness on a material ground. It is not possible. So the reason for that in terms of mind control is that the mind is popping up different reasons according to one's sense gratification, different plans. Okay, that is the sankalpa and vikalpa. The mind has two functions, one is accepting and rejecting. It accepts things which are favorable for sense gratification, or the mind concocts, by doing this I can get happiness, and by doing this I will not get happiness. Based on that, mind accepts or rejects. So Srila Prabhupada gives a nice story regarding this. Prabhupada tells about a man who is working very hard. And his job is, there is a big boat is there in the river, and the boat is carrying different things. So the boat is attached to the shore with a rope. In the sense, he is actually holding on to the rope, and when he moves on the bank of the river, the boat is also moving. In other words, he is actually in one sense he is pulling the boat in the river. It is meaningful because then he can actually pull more load than on the bank, because bank you need a cart or something. This is the water, it is more smooth. So he is pulling and he is thinking. While pulling, he is making plans, you know, struggling hard. So, and another version of this is, you know, in some countries there are this kind of setup, but the horse is actually pulling. So the water, whatever is attached, the boat is attached to the horse through a rope or something. And the horse will be walking, and the thing will be, the whole load will be actually pulled over on a river or something like that. So it is very easy. The horse doesn't have to work too hard. So this man, however, is working very hard and he is walking and he is thinking, so now I am working so hard, but after some time I will become rich. And when I become rich, what will I do? I will have so many pillows and cushions on the floor, on the bank of the river, so that, you know, my feet will not get pain. I can just walk still and I can do the same thing, but I will not have any pain. So Srila Prabhupada was right. He is such a fool. If somebody is rich, then why he has to do all these things? You know, he can just, you know, he can go and relax. You know, somebody else will do the job. But Prabhupada said, you are also like that. Prabhupada is referring to us. He is telling, we want to be happy in the same way and cover the whole world with cushions and soft pillows and have no pain at all. So this is the purpose. This is how mind works. You know, how can you avoid pain? And on the material ground, it is not possible. Like people ask, one person was asking me, if, you know, if I get, you know, my whole life will be peaceful once I pay off my mortgage. He was asking me the question. Will I be happy after I pay off my mortgage? Another boss. And I was thinking, I didn't want to stay straight. One house, you know, to pay off the mortgage, it will take almost one lifetime. So by the time one actually owns the house, he is almost approaching the old age. Most of the people, you know, there is a 25-year-old plan or something, he is 25 and he is paying off for another 20 or 25 years, he is almost reaching 50. 50 is the time, according to Vedas, Panjasatam Vanam Rajet. Okay, you can go to the forest and worship Krishna. So that is the time he is going to owning the house. So the point is, people are thinking, after owning the house, after paying off the mortgage, I can be happy. That is, look, it's the mind is concocting. Mind is telling like this, I will be happy after that. It's a product of the mind, as this verse is telling. But actually one can be happy, even if the loan is paid or not. If you are Krishna conscious, one can automatically be happy. Whether you are paid or not, you are in the process, doesn't matter. So people, when they don't understand this point, then one is on the mental plane. Then one understand our happiness and distress based on the concoction of the mind. So that is the reason this person, our self-realized soul, has completely rejected the idea of all the desires of sense gratification, which are product of the mind or mental concoction, the mental speculation. So that is the first characteristic. And what is the next characteristic? That is, this is the rejection part. What is the other one? That is Atmanyeva Atmana Tishta Kasya Prajna Pratishtita. That is, okay, this is a very, very, very interesting way of writing it. If you literally see Atmani Eva Atmana Tishta, the meaning of that is 55. Yeah, exactly. When his mind thus purified finds satisfaction in the self alone. What, that is Atmani Eva Atmana Tushta. That is, one is actually the mind is getting satisfaction from the self or from the soul. So Srila Prabhupada explains what is the meaning of that. Because in one sense it can have an impersonal connotation to it. Because there is no direct mention about Krishna or the Supreme Lord. It's only about the mind and the self, which is the soul. So that's how people think, okay, I am happy, I am just looking inwards, and thus I am very happy. Usually the impersonal, the Mayavadis usually say, okay, meditating on oneself, one's own self, means one's own soul. So one might think Bhagavad Gita is also supporting the same thing. But Srila Prabhupada very nicely explains what is the meaning of that. That is, deriving happiness in oneself, or the mind is focusing on self, means understanding that the self is part and parcel of Krishna. The self is the eternal servant of Krishna. With that understanding, one can be satisfied. When one understands our Master is the Supreme Lord, then one can be happy. So a self-realized Lord, he understands he is an eternal servant of Krishna. So that is the second characteristic. Clear? Any questions? It's fine. Srila Prabhupada gives in one of the lectures, he says, usually in the mental platform we are consulting our happiness, the so-called happiness, with our own mental concoction. But when one thinks, okay, let me do this because Krishna has sanctioned. Krishna has said me to do this, according to the scriptures, according to the Guru, according to the Shastra and the Sadhus, then it is said, then actually one is in the transcendental platform. Then one is not on the material platform, because he is not taking into consideration the acceptance and rejection of the mind. Rather, we are looking at Krishna. We are looking at Krishna's instruction. So that is the transcendental platform. That is the key symptom of a person who is self-realized. Okay, now, is that clear? That is the first question. What is the next question?
Just a small question.
Huh?
How does he speak?
You have a question? Alright, yeah.
So like you said, like, person will be on platform if he is acting according to Guru Sadhana Shastra. So whatever Guru Sadhana Shastra has told, if he is doing that particular thing, he is on transcendental platform. So if a grahastha is working in a company, so is it on transcendental platform?
Yeah, why not? But that's not the only thing. If you consider the characteristics of a self-realized soul, there are many characteristics. This is one of them. So if somebody is acting on according to one's occupation, yes, definitely it is a part of the whole symptom. He has to manifest everything. This is one thing. If he is acting, okay, Guru has instructed him to work on a job and to support the family, then it is part of it. But it's not all. Say for instance, the first line says we had to discard, we had to give away all the material desires for sense gratification. So that is also there. So we will go further. Yeah, of course. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was working on a job. He was a self-realized pure soul. You know. So work is not an impediment. No, it is spiritual platform. It is beyond the mode of goodness, because all the three modes are still material. So if you have all the three modes, that is spiritual platform, that is called Brahma Buddha, that is pure goodness. Beyond the goodness is pure goodness. That is okay, that is another thing. Devotees can act in the mode of goodness. Devotees are in, if somebody is considering a pure devotee, he is in pure goodness, but he acts in goodness, in material goodness in one sense. If you don't understand what I mean is, a devotee can get up early in the morning. It's an act of in the goodness. Not necessarily it is a transcendental, but he has a transcendental purpose to this. But generally he acts in the mode of goodness. He wears clean clothes, generally. Yes.
But devotee can
Yeah, it is coming down to mode of goodness. It is. Sleeping in Tamagun. No, materialistic persons cannot. Maybe one lifetime. Even maybe one lifetime, but not necessarily that all the lifetime. So that is the reason one point Yamaraj making is, all these people are worthy for punishment. All these people. How is that statement? All you guys are worthy for punishment. Not just you, one or two. Everyone is worthy for punishment. Because now you are acting in the pious way by the mode of goodness, but doesn't guarantee that in the future life you will be acting in the pious way. Because you will be affected by other modes. So you have to act sinfully. It means we will punish you. You know, that is their point of view. Okay, we will catch everyone. That is their point.
So is that why you say?
They are above the three modes of material nature.
like very very similar to something like transcendence.
Yeah, they are in transcendence.
But they are not in the mode of goodness.
No, they can act in the mode of goodness. Say in the man is a pure devotee, but Prabhu, you know, gets up in the early morning, you know, dressing clean, you know, that is acting in the mode of goodness. But it is not just goodness, because there is a transcendental reason to it. Because that you worship the Lord. It's part of their worship to the Lord. Yes, Prabhu. Independent in the sense?
Why am I? When you're saying, you know, it's a very acting.
Oh, yeah. That,
yeah,
that's
so look like that acting.
Yeah, that's a good point, because a pure devotee can be. Pure devotee, of course, is in the pure goodness. He's beyond the three modes of material nature. But externally, we can look, he is acting in passion, apparently. He may look like, you know, he's in ignorance or passion. For instance, Vritrasura. He was a pure devotee. Apparently, he was acting in the mode of passion, apparently, externally. So, generally, devotees don't do that. So, that reason is an exception, we can see. He was killing, but he was a pure devotee. He hold his prayers, even while fighting, the prayers were, you know, completely transcendental. So he was completely pure, he was in pure goodness, but external action apparently was in passion and killing, maybe in the ignorance or some part, apparently. So you see, but generally devotees are not like that. You see how the difference, how it works, you know, internal and externally, generally as goodness. Srila Prabhupada, you won't see him rushing all the time, you know, peaceful, you know, walking, you know, everything in the mode of goodness, externally. But he, you know, he's beyond three modes. But externally, it's in goodness, you know what I mean? Like this. Okay, now what is the next question? How does he speak? Okay, there is a literal version to this answer. That's very interesting. How does he speak?
He speaks about Krishna.
Yeah, he speaks about Krishna. That's a simple answer. He speaks about Krishna. So Prabhupada gives a very nice example. He says, people are actually very intelligent and very respectable if they don't open their mouth. But as soon as they open their mouth, then the truth will come out. Their real quality, it will be manifested automatically. So when a fool, if there's a fool or a, you know, a pundit, we can know if they open their mouth. So silence, so sometimes
that means whenever
who opens their mouth,
they are
doesn't mean anything. Usually it's a real silence is talking about Krishna. So we have to judge, okay, we can go through, we have to really see. And what is the, there is one more meaning to it. So we go. The another meaning is how does he talk mean? How does he respond? If there are external disturbances, then how such a person responds, that is how a self-realized person responds to the external disturbances. Because this world is full of disturbances, in one form or the other form. That's how the material world is. So how he responds to that? So that is another characteristic to know a self-realized person. Sorry? Anyone knows the answer to this? Quickly. Pitaraga bhaya kroka. Close. Before that. Dukheshu anidvigna mana sukheshu vigadas praga. That is when there is misery. What do you do if there is misery? You will be crying. Oh no, what is going on? Krishna, please. What is this? You know, it's a whole, yeah, it's a full problem. And if there is happy, if there is something comes good, you know, with a pay hike or, you know, good job or good position, then what happens? Yeah, there, Haribol, very nice, we are very happy, Krishna is very merciful. And we actually, it is interesting, even in our mind, if your material success actually creates in our mind lust also. In material, when one is materially attached, one actually forgets Krishna. A pure devotee will see how he acts. Usually we forget Krishna. And we think, because of my effort, I have got the success. And then the lust to enjoy, separate from Krishna, that will increase in the conditioned state. So for a pure devotee, for a self-realized soul, it is quite different. So that is the symptoms which are given. One is, he is okay even in the happiness and distress. What he does?
economics.
Yeah, in happiness, okay, what he thinks? Yeah, exactly. In happiness, he gives credit to Krishna. He thinks, this, I am not actually worthy for this happiness, and Krishna is so merciful that he has given me this opportunity. So, it is, he gives credit to Krishna. We give credit to ourselves. If somebody is self-realized, we'll give complete credit to? No, to Krishna. Self-realized, complete credit to Krishna. For us, either we take full credit or we will have a share business. Some for you, some for me. Okay, sir. And in distress?
It's my own karma.
It's my own, exactly. That is, it's my own karma. It is because of my own sinful activities that I have got this distress. And it's not enough. Actually, I was worthy of even
more.
I should have got even more. And Krishna is so merciful that only he has given me token. As Prabhupada says, an example, you know, if you think, you know, the hand is a little bit cut, my cut is open. As Prabhupada says, actually, that the whole hand would have cut, but by Krishna's mercy, it's only a small cut at the end of the finger. So that is that is only token reaction. So how is this possible? So it is that is the reason it is said it is the anukampa, it is the mercy of the Lord. Brahma's prayer, Prabhupada, you know, that lines you can see in the Bhagavad Gita also. The Tathayanukampam verse. Have you heard this verse? Tathayanukampam Susamikramanam. Any one of you? We have it. What's the point of that verse? Anyone knows? Basically, you know. Yeah, exactly. Krishna is merciful so that even the whatever reaction we are getting, it is only because of our bad karma, as we discussed earlier. And still one is ready to continue on devotional service irrespective of all the distress. So that's the reason Lord Brahma is setting an example of a self-realized soul at that point after Brahma Vimohana Leela in front of Lord Krishna. So he is presenting himself. That is whatever, you know, he's presenting the great philosophy. And also it's very interesting because I'll come to that later. Yeah, it is Tathayanukampam Susumikshamanam. What is that? Number 10, 14, I don't know the exact verse number. You can, in the beginning stages, 6 or 7, that range. Yeah. In the beginning of 14th chapter, 10th chapter. You had a question?
Yes.
That's karma. Yeah. Oh yeah, that's a good point. So why karma comes to a devotee? Because it is actually administered by Krishna himself for the purification of the devotee. So the karma that we are getting, a devotee, somebody is getting a karma. Yes, in one sense it is karma. It is because of my bad action. But there is a hand of Krishna in it. It's not just karma for a person outside devotional service. But still there is a hand of Krishna. He is using that karma and he is giving personally that karma to us, the reaction to that karma to us, so that we get purified. So it acts as a medium for our purification. Rather than, you know, the karma is gone and they can again do something wrong and they can again get, you know, repeating the cycle, going again. Instead, it is acting as a medium of our purification. So that is the difference. In the mode of ignorance?
Yes.
Not necessarily that if Krishna is putting one in the mode of ignorance. You know, one can act, one has a free choice. One can act an ignorant way.
Is it the mode will automatically get imposed or is it different on the person himself?
One can come out of the mode. One can act independent in one sense if we have the right knowledge. One will be placed in a circumstance which is quite prone to act according to a particular mode, but one can actually go beyond that. It's like karma. For instance, if we analyze the same point in the karma context, karma can give a situation, but karma cannot force you to act in a certain way. You understand? Karma can give you wealth, but how you utilize wealth? If you are very wealthy, then they are very natural that one can act in the mode of passion because so much of wealth is there. But the karma is not imposing you to act in the mode of passion. It's up to you. If somebody gets some transcendental knowledge, even if somebody is very wealthy, still he can act in pure goodness. Got the point? So the karma will not push, or your actions in a Krishna is not pushing you. No. There is that three choices there. Yes, Prabhu.
This also I have the humility to realize that it's not necessarily
Yeah, that's good.
It's more restraint. Drag it out and make it hang it on.
Yeah.
I just heard like the bad times come on a devotee because of three reasons. One is because of material karma.
Mm.
The second thing, when some suffering comes, it's for reformation.
Yeah.
To reform you.
Mm.
And the third thing, if you voluntarily reform yourself, then there will be no like bad effects on you.
Okay.
So it's up to you in which way you will reform yourself. By punishment or by voluntary? So if we are voluntarily reforming ourselves, then there will be no punishment.
Yeah, but there is one thing, you have to understand the prarabdha karma is already there. Whatever is associated with this body, it is already there.
But Guru, in Netra Devotion, it is said like when a devotee has started a devotional service,
yeah.
The karma which is in the form of seed also, it's destroyed.
No, but the point is, it doesn't say, it doesn't say like that. If prarabdha is not gone, prarabdha is your body. Your body is your karma. You understand? You cannot lose your body. You need your karma actually to purify yourself. You cannot reject completely. You know, the body is a vehicle for you to perform devotional service. So if all the karmas are gone means, then you don't have this body. The body is your karma. You understand? So you cannot, you know, completely reject, you know, that part. So some karma we already have. Some certain intelligence, certain memory, you know, something is already there. But it's not an impediment in our devotional service. Krishna can utilize that to purify, you know, to perform devotional service. Okay, then, okay, in that, I'll come to that. Another point, in the form of devotional service, there is a sequence, we will get to that later. There is a sequence in which different karmas are burned. It is given, aprarabdha phalam pavam, kudam bijam, phalvanmukam. That is a sequence. Kramanyeva praliyada Vishnu bhakti atatmana. So we'll get to that later. So there is a sequence in which different, okay, you know that there are different levels of karma. There is a sequence in which it is burnt. Okay. Finally, it's actually Bhagavan Mukham. So, not yet. Okay. Yeah, we'll get to that in the Nectar Devotion. Yeah. Yes, you had a question. Someone probably had a question. Yeah, exactly. That's another, I think we had a discussion down back here. This is for everyone. Suffering not available. Suffering is optional. You want to suffer or not, it's optional. our consciousness. It's according to our consciousness. Whether we want to suffer or not for the same reaction or same mystery that we are actually going through. Whether we want to suffer or not, it's up to us in oneself. It depends on our consciousness. Because you can see pure devotees are also going through great mysteries. But they are not suffering, they are transcendental, they are happy. But we are not actually going through, literally there is nothing, still we are suffering. So we have to understand the difference in consciousness. Okay, then one interesting point, that is one definition Srila Prabhupada gives about this Siddhadhir Muni is that he has actually gone beyond the stage of mental speculation. General definition of Muni is, a Muni is a Muni if we speculate. If he comes up with something new, then he is a Muni. That is a qualification. If he presents the same philosophy again and again, it's not qualified. It's like philosophers. A philosopher has to be respected, then he has to produce new things, you know. New books, new theories, new speculation. Means they had to speculate. But a Siddhadhir Muni is, he is beyond speculation. So that one we had to understand. And then, coming to Tathenukam from verse, okay, that is about the mercy of the Lord. So he understands everything is both happiness and distress are because of mercy of the Lord. Both happiness and distress because of mercy of the Lord. That is the key reason behind that. And not only that, it's a very nice sequence, is just quickly I'll tell. Actually, the verse actually, this Tathenikamam comes, the verse before, it is actually Gunatmanaste Gunan Vimatam. That is the verse. It actually talks about the qualities of the Supreme Lord. It is said the Lord has unlimited qualities. So when Lord Brahma comes to this verse, Tathenikamam, he says, Tat means therefore. So since the Lord has all these qualities, therefore I worship Him independent of whatever happens. And I accept whatever happens as mercy of the Lord. So there is actually a flowing sequence is there, in the sequence is there in Bhagavatam. So that is especially stressing the quality of the Supreme Lord. Then now, if you read Surrender Unto Me, you can see the same qualities. Say happiness, distress, attachment, aversion, he is not attached, he is not averse to anything, anger, no anger. He is again equal to both good and bad. He doesn't glorify. Somebody gives good, then glorify. Somebody is, you know, treating in a different way, then immediately criticize. He doesn't do like that. So that is the next verse actually. Na apinandati, na dveshti. He doesn't glorify or he doesn't despise. So he is actually independent to that. And why a devotee of the Lord, of course, can do this, because he is actually only concerned about Krishna. And Krishna is all good. Krishna is all good. He is absolute. He is all good. So he is only concerned about Krishna, so he can act independent of all these things. Then the question comes, is only devotee can act in this way? So Surrender Unto Me actually answers. If only a devotee can act, you know, whether it's happiness or distress, whether it's attachment, aversion, no anger, equal to good and bad, who else can act like that in the same way? Exactly, an impersonalist who has realized Brahman, he can also act in the same way. Interesting enough. It's not only a devotee, an impersonal can also act in the same way. But the reason is different. Here we are seeing the mercy of the Lord, but the reason is different. So if you give an example, say the impersonalists are averse. They you know, they don't want the material. They are completely detached. If you know, this is material thing, I don't want it. It's completely averse of that. No money. I don't want. If somebody gives money, I don't want any money. So that is impersonalist. Means who is after the impersonal Brahma Jyoti. If we give an example, if we give buckwheat, who likes buckwheat? By itself, you like by itself. no curry. So if we give you buckwheat, first day you will eat. The second meal also I am serving you buckwheat. It's not an agassi. Normal day. And third meal also buckwheat. And I'll give fourth. On the fifth meal of, not fifth, fourth itself, what will happen? What will you say? Hey, vomiting, okay, already vomiting. I don't want it anymore. Enough. You know, I had enough, you know, I don't want it anymore. I have no attraction, no more attraction for that. But suppose if you give buckwheat one plate, by itself, nothing else. Option 1. And option 2 is a very nice plate of prasadam. There is, you know, rice is there. There are, you know, rotis are there. Different kinds of sabji is there. Ice cream is there. Fruit salad is there. Then cake is there. The pakoda, okay, pakodas are there. So we are giving the two choice. You choose one. Then one can easily avoid. First meal itself is a buckwheat. Prabhuji, you can keep. We have a nice you can eat. We have a nice plate of prasadam. I will eat. Why we are doing like that? Because there we have the variety and quality of the prasadam is quite different from the first. Remember, it's not an ekadashi day. Otherwise, there's no option. You have to eat. If you are hungry, there's no option. If nothing else, not even pickle is there with that. Still, you have to eat. So, because of the quality. In the same way, when we approach Krishna, when we approach the name, form, qualities and pastimes of Krishna, there is taste, there is varieties, and it is very attractive. So, a devotee, he can see the quality of the Supreme Lord. And when he sees the quality of the Supreme Lord, then he can be, he doesn't have to worry about this duality. Whereas, a Brahman realized person, he is completely, he doesn't want anything to do with the material world. It's like eating buckwheat, you know, 10 times. I don't want anymore. He's completely detached. Okay, I don't want anything material. And at the same time, he doesn't have any variety. There is no variety for him. So he is in a neutrality state, and with that neutrality he is somehow or other able to be detached from the duality, because he is sick of it. He is sick of the material duality. He will vomit. He doesn't want anything anymore. Okay, so he is peaceful, he doesn't want anything. So these are the two different reasons for devotees and for impersonalists. Yeah?
So
you understand impersonalists? What is impersonalists? In one sense? Okay, impersonalist means the Supreme Lord, Absolute Truth, Krishna, we know he has a form, he has activities, he has name, he has qualities, he has everything. But he also has another feature, which is the light emanating from him. It is called Brahma Jyoti. So it's a spiritual light. And the impersonalists, they don't know about the Supreme Lord, but they only know about the light. So what is the absolute? They will say it is light. Maybe tube light or, you know, so many kinds of light. But it's not that kind of light, it is a spiritual light. And they want to become part of that light, so that they can forget everything. So that is the aim. So that in that forgetfulness in one sense, or you know, they are unaware of anything else, no qualities, nothing, then they are completely indifferent to all the material devices. Okay, now we have they are actually Brahma Bhuya, Brahma Bhuda platform, they are also beyond the three modes. They are also beyond, they don't have material desire. They are in one, at this stage, they are beyond the material. Yes, true.
When he enters the Brahma Jyoti, there are no material desire.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you lose identity.
Yeah.
How come if there is no rasa,
yeah, yeah,
how come then you come back, you know, to answer? So, all is there, just lost
the
identity.
So, that is why Srila Prabhupada mentioned one cannot actually lose the identity, it's not possible. We in the 2.12, what is the word?
Yeah.
What is it? Natsayavaham, exactly. Natsayavaham jyadunasa natsam neve janadhiva natsayava na bhavishyama sarvayavayam atah param. That is, all, everyone has individuality. You, me, all these things, we existed before, we are existing now, we will exist in the future as individual beings. So everyone has individuality, so even after Brahman realization, one will have individuality. Srila Prabhupada gives a very good example. He says, you can be a drop in the ocean, but if the sun comes and if you evaporate, then that drop goes up and it becomes separate from the vast ocean. What is that?
Green frog,
yeah. Actually, I think parrot usually is the example. Parrot? Green parrot, yeah. Green parrot, yeah. That is another example. Green parrot in a green tree. Apparently it looks everything is merged, but still there is some identity. Frog is not usually on top of the tree. Parrot. Parrot is the usual example, if I'm right. Is it correct?
Tree frog.
Yeah? A tree frog, okay. Strange. Yeah, anyway. Okay, so individuality is maintained. That's the reason they can fall down. Then Kanto, even the demigods are saying. Because they don't worship the Lord of feet of Krishna, then they have to fall down. No taste to worship Krishna's Lord of feet, so they remain sometimes, then get bored and then come down. And on the material ground, they become so much elevated, and after that they start hospitals. They are not materially attached, but they end up starting hospitals. And there's a long queue and the fee and the whole, you know, they get into full administration and management and the whole business. Which one? The Brahman? Yeah, Brahman, that's the reason it's not eternal. We are discussing the reason why it's not eternal, because they are not attached to the lotus feet of Krishna. And one needs the association. One cannot say, Ruva say, simple reason both, one gets bored. It's boring. So they have to come down. So if they can't get the spiritual association, they can then come back to the material world and get material association. So they don't get both. Occupied with Maya rather than, you know, the Yoga Maya, there is Maha Maya here. So one or the other, yes.
One thing is that impersonal people, then there is Brahma.
Hmm.
This is all that.
Yeah. One of the things, if they desire, they can remain perpetually there.
According to Prabhupada said, the conclusion Prabhupada has given is one that one has to. Prabhupada
this is a plus of
it. Instead of this one, you're not forced by what the Supreme Court has to come in.
Oh, yeah.
But there's no duality, and therefore the nature of the soul is they just
can't. Yeah, that's the point. Yeah.
And therefore, as soon as they have a choice to stay there in boredom or suffer in the wrong birth and death, even though God happiness or the lack of suffering
is
true, well, that's still every soul would rather suffer in the life of the birth and death of the variety.
Exactly.
Than boring.
Yeah, that's the point. It's not a force. That's a good point. It's not a force. That's right. It's not a force. But in one sense, one is choosing because of
the fact that you don't have to say that it's a force in each of the degrees. Why screw so much offering will take? He's not forced to take the degree, but he will take the degree.
And at the same time, if any person is get an association of a devotee, then he can actually give up that and he can go beyond that. Do you have any examples? Shukadeva Goswami. Who else? Other than Shukadeva Goswami, who is the famous example? Kaur Kumara. So they smell the tulsi. Then they develop taste. To serve the Lord, feet of the Lord. Okay. So that part is clear. How does he talk? How does he respond? Fine. I think one more point is there, I suppose. Okay, one is Krishna sees Krishna's mercy and his only concern is Krishna. So what is the next question? Yeah, so how is he going to sit? What is the meaning of how he sits? How he does not engage his senses. He does not engage. Not engage. So that is the reason there is a very nice example of tortoise. A tortoise. What is this? Tortoise. Animal.
Whenever he wants, he can withdraw.
Exactly. Whenever he wants, he can withdraw his senses. That is his legs or head also? Head also, yes. So everything is going inside the shell. And it is coming out whenever he wants. So what is the whole point in it? How it is connected to a self-realized soul?
Whenever he wants, he can control his senses and work according to
him.
He wants to work according to the senses, like what
his senses are supposed to
do. Yes. Proverbs gives a very good, nice statement he makes. A self-realized soul can use his senses according to his plan. For us, when the senses are, to a great degree, senses are going according to its attraction. It's not according to our plan. But for a self-realized person, it can go according to his plan. He can make the plan and he can dictate. Okay, in this way you act, then the senses will act. So tortoise, the example is, when it is favorable, it will use its senses in service of Krishna. And if it is not unfavorable, then no, it doesn't use. So how it is applying to Arjun? For Arjun, is favorable or unfavorable? It is favorable because Krishna is ordering him to fight. So he did use his senses to fight. But he's thinking, okay, no, I shouldn't fight. I should keep my senses away from all this kind of activities, apparently sinful. Okay, what is the analogy that Prabhupada gives regarding the sense control of a devotee? Yeah, venomous serpent and who actually controls the venomous snake charmer? Yes, exactly. The snake charmer, he can control all the serpents. I was hearing Gangeshwar Prabhu's one of the Bhagavatam class. You remember? Everyone, only a few of us were there in the Bhagavatam class. So I would tell the story. It is one of Prabhupada's godbrother, I think. He came to know about a snake charmer. They were not believing that a snake charmer can actually control the snake. So in one part of Bengal, he actually visited a snake charmer. And he actually, there was venomous snake and he could, by mantra, he could actually control. He will not bite, he will come, whatever he says, he will come and go, no problem. And at one point, what he did was, he opened all the venomous snakes, all of them. So the whole room, the Prabhuji was standing and the snake charmer was there and the snakes were running everywhere, crawling everywhere. And he was completely terrified. The snake charmer said, as far as I am here and I am standing the mantra, nothing will happen. He will not touch it. And he was terrified and standing, but he could see the snakes everywhere. But nothing happened. Then he stands in the mantra and you know, everyone, all the snakes came back to the cages and that. It's shocking. So he understood, yes, there are people who can do that. In the same way, actually devotees are also like that. Devotees can be devotees any part of the world, isn't it right? With the association of the devotees, anywhere.
The same world, yeah.
Say, it doesn't mean, you know, we don't have to be in the Indian village, for instance, to practice Krishna consciousness. We didn't even, you know, come in touch with the devotees there at least. So Melbourne is known for enjoyment, you know, the whole kind of pleasures, different kinds of things.
I think Melbourne is a forest for the Indian village.
Okay, yeah. So this is
it's a
forest. It's a Vanam, you know, it's a Vanam. It's a Vrindavan. Prabhupada says it's a Vrindavan. So how it is possible? Because the devotion service is independent. Wherever there is devotee.
Come back to this thing last
night. Okay.
So this is this boy is any one boy can answer the question. You have to give the correct answer. So can you use the same word when you go back to in India? So say one Bangalore, can you go back to Bangalore Central? Can you stay in the same word?
Yeah.
But you have to one.
So you don't
I
perfect
answer. Okay. Srila Prabhupada gave a very good example regarding the sense. He said, it is like if children are crying, then father gives them toys. Toys is, you know, mean anything, but the toys to just to experience something. In the same way, for the spirit soul, when they are agitated, they want to, you know, they want independence, they want to be separate, so Krishna gives the toys of senses. So we have the toys. So we are actually playing with our toys. So we are gratifying senses in so many different kinds of ways. Yeah. Drinking many things, seeing so many things, and walking around with so many things, you know, owning so many things. So these are different senses are given by Krishna, the Father. So you walk around, you know, you enjoy it for some time. So that's the senses we have, the toys of senses. And with this we are very preoccupied and we forget our real purpose. We are not at all happy to give away the toys. Still we want the toys. We are big boys with toys. That's all. No difference. Next point is, how we control the senses, a devotee? Is it a difficult task for the question is it a difficult task for tortoise to withdraw his senses?
No,
it's just a natural activity, like that. And how the same thing devotees do?
When they get in a higher state in Krishna.
Yeah, the principle of higher state. Yeah. Is that a question? Parandusra, that is a higher state. Higher state. Bhakvin? Higher state. Yeah, higher state, there is no problem. Otherwise there is a problem. Next series of verses I think goes on. If our senses are not controlled, then what happens? Then there is a series we had to actually go through. A series of things we had to go through. And before that, I think okay, we are straight away going there. Okay. One point that is not coming in that picture actually, that is, it's 260 Yashasopiya Vikaranteya, that is, even if the senses are so powerful, it's actually giving the other part of the senses. Okay, don't engage in like that. The senses are so powerful that you can take away?
No.
What?
Mind.
Yeah, it can, first level, the level 1 is it can take away?
Mind.
The mind. The mind can actually control the senses, but the senses can take away the mind. And not only, not just for an ordinary person, it is a vipassitaha. Vipassana means a man of intelligence who can discriminate. Even for such a person, the senses are so powerful that it can take away the mind. If that is an even we can see in the Varnashram, the association is very restricted. Say, men are not freely associating with the woman. There is a quite strict rules are there for everyone. Brahmacharis, Grihastas, Sannyasis, Vanaprasas, very very strict rules are there. Because the senses can take away the mind. Even somebody is advanced in knowledge, one can discriminate, intelligence is there, still the senses can see. The mind will go away. And so, and especially this verse is referring to, 260 is referring to a person who is on the Jnana platform, who is analyzing and who is discriminating. And for him, it is very easy. If the senses are actually coming in touch with the sense object, then immediately the mind can go away. Just like Vishwamitra. Vishwamitra was a great yogi, and he didn't even see Menaka. What did he see? Nothing. But he heard. What he heard? Antlers, clang, clang. The sound came and immediately got agitated. And the mind went away, and he also went away. Finished. We see an example of Saubarimani. He was meditating underwater by performing so many mystic yogas, and he saw, in his head, he saw the fish mating. And he just saw that. Then he wanted to get married, and he expanded himself into seven, and he married how many women? 50? 100? Yeah, 50, okay, many. Then he wanted to, next he wanted to enjoy it. All the yoga, everything gone away. And he became a complete, in other sense, enjoyer. So Prabhupada actually contrasts these kind of examples to a devotee. So devotee, even Haridas Thakur, for instance, you know, Haridas Thakur, he was actually tested by a prostitute. But Haridas Thakur, what he did? Okay, let me chant more.
He was talking.
Yeah.
He was chanting, but he was talking to the prostitute.
Yeah, he talked to the prostitute. Prostitute came and asked, okay, can I want to enjoy with you. Haridas Thakur said, yes, no problem. But let me finish my round. So keep going, you know, chanting on and on and on and on. Then one day, first day, the prostitute, the morning game, prostitute went away, I'll come next night, we should satisfy. Haridas Thakur said, yes, sure, next night.
So he asked, then he finished 24 hours. Hang on a second, 24 hours.
A couple of times he went and came back. Second night also came. And the third night, actually the prostitute got purified. Because Haridas Thakur is a pure chanter. So hearing the holy names from the mouth of a pure devotee, she got liberated. So if you go to Jagannath Puri, you can see the temple where Haridas Thakur is there, that Mataji is also there. He has become an exalted devotee. Initiated by Haridas Thakur. And Haridas Thakur says, I came this way, where was it? Benford, yeah. I came this way only because of you, to deliver you. So that is the difference. A pure devotee and a great yogi. How the senses are taking away, and here now. So instead, Krishna is telling next. Opposite of this, instead the senses are taking the mind away, rather you engage the senses in Krishna service and become a Matpara devotee. Matpara devotee. And who is an example of a devotee who engaged all his senses in service of Krishna? Maharaj. Ambarish. There is a very nice verse in Bhagavad Gita. For everything he engaged in service of Krishna. Even the sense of touch. Even the rubbing, shoulder rubbing like this. That also he engaged in service of Krishna. How was it?
Devotee.
So many devotees are there, so whomever he touches, all devotees. So he said, you know, just even the touch, sense of touch like this also, just with the devotee. So that was the position of Ambarish Maharaj. He didn't complain, the temple room is so packed, so I am touching devotees, give me separate seat, you know, away from you. No, he told me about that, rubbing with the devotees.
No problem.
So that is Ambarish Maharaj. And in that verse, it's a very good statement is there. The first half of the, again anyone read 261? Sani Sarvani, read the first line. Sani Samyamya Yukta Asina Mataraha. Okay, sure. So the first half if you take Sani Sarvani Samyamya means control the senses. That is the first half. And the next half is Yukta Asina Mat Paraha. Yukta Asina means
keeping
up.
Exactly. Because they have in relationship to me, that is connecting to me. So this is the process of Krishna consciousness. First step is control. That's right, you sense that's control. We have voluntary principles and rules which are attached to it. And the next step is being a devotee, that is performing devotional service. So even the first line actually shows the full story of our Krishna consciousness. The self-control part and connecting oneself to Krishna. Because self-control in itself is not sufficient, but one has to perform the linking process of devotional service, standing to, starting from standing and hearing and remembering. Alright, next section is very interesting, and everyone knows this, we can very easily relate to this. This is verses 60. Verses 60? 2? 62 and 63, not just 62. So, can anyone relate to this? Contemplation on sense objects.
Yeah.
Very easy. And now everyone has enough experience, contemplation on the sense objects. Okay, then what happens if you contemplate? Okay, yeah, if you think about nice gulab jamun, next what do you think? Okay, I need one. I want. That is an example. It can be anything. Which we can't tell normally. It can be anything. But the attachment develops. Okay? And from attachment?
Lust.
Lust is intensified form.
More.
Lust. I need it. I want it. And lust, what is the connection between lust and anger? From lust, how the anger comes? We didn't get, then the anger comes. If you get, then the more. Then you want, what call, if you want more, what do you call that?
Greed.
So even greed can come to anger? Is there anything enough to satisfy our greed?
No.
So end result is anger, because the frustration I have to be there. So from anger to delusion. Delusion means what is the meaning of delusion? Yeah, kind of.
Bewilderment.
Kind of deluded. Kind of illusion. In illusion. Yeah, in illusion. Delusion to bewilderment of what? Memory. It's not just bewilderment, but bewilderment of memory. Yeah, this is delusion means delusion. Like, an angry man, can he discriminate?
No.
When somebody is angry, you know, the father kills the child. In anger, the father kills the child. His son or daughter, so many people. Anger means completely in delusion. Out. So that is even anger, from anger, delusion comes. And from the delusion, memory loss. Is there any connection between illusion and memory loss? No, not yet there. Illusion and memory loss. Yeah. Yeah, it's in the right direction. Yeah, a bit more. Yeah, you forget what your duty is. Part of the definition of we are in Maya, often we make the term, we are in Maya, means you are an illusion.
Something
yeah, it's not right, and we actually forget whom? Yeah, we forget Krishna. In the illusion, we actually connect it to forgetfulness of Krishna. So that we can see here, the memory loss means we forget what's our real identity, what's our connection with Krishna. So that is material existence, that is Maya. So illusion, delusion or memory loss are very well connected. And if there is no memory, then what is the intelligence is now gone. Intelligence is now usually, if we have spiritual intelligence, what is the spiritual intelligence in reference to? What is the active point? Where it is getting the information from?
Instruction.
Yeah, instruction from the crystal instruction from Guru Sadhu. And if we can remember any of those things, then our intelligence is gone actually. We are spiritually gone, there is no intelligence left. Then, when there is no intelligence, fall down to material food. So, the point is, senses can forcibly take away the mind, and solution is, be a matpara devotee. Somebody has that. That's the only thing. Mm-hmm. And we are coming to the last question. What is that?
Last question. Anyone? How does he walk? How does he walk? What does that mean? Yeah, how he exactly, how he uses the senses, how he engages the senses. Not the walking style, as I can't walk or some more meaning. Okay. Okay, first day, what is
Maskala, the literal meaning is in relationship with Krishna. That's the literal meaning of Maskala.
Which one?
It means how he engages the senses. We have all the senses. How he, what, how he uses it.
How he uses it.
Yeah,
kind of,
yeah.
Going to Dham.
Going to Dham.
You know, I want some answers from the Bhagavad
Gita. Yeah, it's part of the devotional service, but not specifically from this section of Bhagavad Gita.
I'm not saying it's wrong, but not appropriate here.
Have you known already?
That is his.
Priest, okay, that is one part. And he is following regulated principles of prayer.
Following the
principles of prayer. Yeah, he follows particularly regulated principles of prayer. And how he is able to follow this? Because he works for the satisfaction of Krishna. So he engages his senses in satisfaction of Krishna. And due to that reason, he can follow the regulated principles.
Otherwise there is no possibility of following. Srila Prabhupada writes, if one can act or not to act, if it is doing under the direction of Krishna, that is, that in itself is the causeless mercy of the Lord. So you see that term is coming from Sade, that is the mercy. That is, if somebody is acting, to act or not to act, if somebody is deciding according to Krishna's will, according to the instructions of Krishna, and that itself is the mercy of the Lord. Because without the mercy of the Lord, we can't act. Exactly. So the yes, Prabhu.
I was in the follow of regulated principles of freedom. This freedom is what is what freedom is.
Okay. Regulated principles of freedom. Anyone want to answer that question? If regulated principles are giving freedom or it's like the trapping, you know, it's like the isolation. What are the regulated principles?
Freedom
from the entanglement, freedom from the harassment of the senses. Otherwise, senses are demanding and we are following, faithfully fulfilling the desires of the senses. That's what goes up. So if you don't do that, then exactly freedom. That's the definition of freedom. Because we are not detected by the senses, rather, we are controlling our senses. People don't see it that way. That is, considering, you know, you are actually bound by the law. You are actually in a jail kind of situation where you are acting in a certain way. But actually, it's in freedom. You
know,
so we are controlling, not that the freedom. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. If you're telling a good point, that is, by following the regulated principles, of course, bhakti is there, then one can actually get freedom from the material existence.
So we are controlling not the history.
We are controlling
not the history.
For the senses. Yeah, we are not giving freedom to the senses. Yeah.
If you follow a good diet and you stay healthy, if you're healthy then you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
But if you don't follow a good diet and you follow the ministry of your senses, then you get sick.
Yeah.
Then you can't do anything.
That's right. That's it. Here is the diet example. And next point is satisfaction in Krishna bhakti, and that will lead to steady intelligence. If somebody gets satisfaction in Krishna bhakti, or only bhakti can give full satisfaction for the soul, and that satisfaction can lead to steady intelligence. We are talking about Siddhadhyar Muni now. Siddhadhyar Muni means Siddhadhyar means steady intelligence. The satisfaction in bhakti, we can have intelligence. Otherwise, there is no Krishna state.
My name means me, sir. There's no peace.
There is no peace.
So that's the reason it is said, intelligent. In the next verse it is said, you know, the 66 it is said, nasty buddhi ayukasya. That is, one who is not a devotee, there is no steady intelligence. And if there is no steady intelligence, there is no steady mind. And if there is no steady mind, there is no peace of mind. And if there is no peace of mind, then where what is the question of attitude? So this is everything starting from the steady intelligence in this case.
You're here in the end now.
So let's say initially I told exaggerated, the ideal situation is intelligence should control
the mind,
and the mind should control the senses. And here the senses
are controlling,
like the wind is blowing everywhere. And the mind is attached to the senses, just like the body. So the body is also going everywhere with the wind. Like that, the mind is going away everywhere with the senses. And the intelligence is going along with the mind. Just like a person in the boat is going along with the boat, the intelligence is going everywhere with the mind and the senses everywhere. It means it's completely. Is it example? What kind of intelligence that you want in the devotional service?
Steady.
And in the last section,
one pointed.
What that? One pointed is intelligence. This is not one pointed, this is many brands because it's everywhere. All are very intelligent.
So, I'll give
a simple answer. That the part of intelligence is to discriminate and to make the right decision. So, the mind, if you consider the difference between the mind and the intelligence, the mind can propose so many ideas. But how to do something, how exactly to do something, that is a part of the intelligence. Say for instance, the mind can then draw a circle. That is the proposition of the mind, for instance. Proposition of the mind, the thought process. Then how exactly to do it is different from the intelligence. One man can think, okay, take the stroke and not a body and just draw a circle. Like one may think, okay, I want a perfect circle, maybe I should tie a rope with a stroke and hold it here at the center and just protect like that so I can get a good circle. So that is the part of the intelligence. So the discrimination is part of it and the execution as such, that is part of the intelligence. So that is in one sense, it is considered intelligence is made of mode of passion. Because the execution element is coming into intelligence. Whereas mind apparently is from the mode of being. Everything from passion. Yes,
Okay, intelligence,
we have to understand that very clearly. Here we are talking about, like we have the senses. We can see the senses. That is our gross body and we have the subtle body. Both not part of the soul. So the intelligence is part of the subtle body, the sukshma, sharir. Mind, intelligence and part of the soul. Okay. We have spirit soul, we have gross body and we have subtle body. Gross body is what we can observe. And the subtle body includes the mind, intelligence and part of the soul. So it is not part of the soul, it is separate from the soul.
No, intelligence is not part of the soul.
We have the subtle body and the gross body. Subtle body is the sukshma sharir. It has mind, intelligence and false ego. For the false identification of the soul with the gross and subtle body. We think I am the mind, I am the body, I am the intelligence. That part, the false identification, that is false ego. So these are not part of the soul. Soul is separate from both the gross and the subtle body.
But
it doesn't mean soul doesn't have intelligence, it has spirit, it has everything, it has everything.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not manifested at this stage. We are acting on the gross body and the subtle body in so many different ways. It's not part of the soul.
But when soul changes the body, the subtle body goes
through. Exactly, the subtle body goes along with that. Yeah.
Yeah, the soul world also, the subtle body will go along.
No, not both the world. What is there in the spiritual world?
Only spirit.
Only spiritual things. So the subtle body is again material. In the 7th chapter we will learn, you know. Gumirava, Analavayu, Thammana, Buthirevacha, Thammana, Buthi, Mana and Buthi are part of the material elements. They are material elements. That is only of this world.
So our main motive is to finish the subtle body.
In one sense. That's not the main, but it is part, it will happen in the past, the part of the process.
So, you want to say like we have to control the mode of goodness with mode of passion.
Quickly, I will not dwell too much into it. The point is, intelligence is made of the mode of passion according to Bhagavatam. So how can we control? Because we are not using our material intelligence. Rather, it's not possible really to control for a long time the material mind is the material intelligence. Rather, we are using the spiritualized intelligence.
Spiritual
life intelligence means intelligence is exactly from the shastra. We are referring to shastra. Whatever we are getting from the shastra, that we are using to control the mind. Then we are able to control the mind. Otherwise, we will end up nowhere.
There is no proper mind control.
So there are three intelligence modes: material intelligence, spiritual intelligence.
To make it very clear, I used the term spiritualized. Actually, we can call that spiritualism. Class 22, not get complicated. Actually, there is spiritual intelligence of the spirit soul. That itself, the spirit soul, we have our own intelligence. And it's not part of the subtle body, we have our intelligence. So if you want to be technically precise, we can call that as spiritual intelligence. And the intelligence which we use, we can call it spiritualized intelligence. Okay? But you don't have to go so complicated. So, material intelligence and spiritual
intelligence.
So we are almost finishing up this section. Almost done. This quickly I'm going to finish. Thank you.
Sleeping?
Sense control, mind control, and sleep control. That's all I can say. There are a couple of points I'll just quickly mention. That's the prajna and sense enjoyment compared to sleeping man and his surroundings. Okay, so the sleeping man and the surrounding. That is, a sleeping man is unaware of his surroundings, isn't it? If somebody who is sleeping and snoring, the people around are bothered by him, but he is not bothered by anything. Okay, so in the same way, even if the whole world is completely engrossed in the sense enjoyment, but if the pragya, he is not bothered about the sense enjoyment. He is fixed in his Krishna consciousness. And even in presence of, that is a very famous verse, that is Abhuryamanam Achala Pradishtam, that verse. That is said, even if there are many desires coming to his mind, if many thoughts and many desires, he may come to a person's mind, a self-realized person's mind, but he is not acting upon it. It comes and goes, just like an ocean in which many rivers are coming. It doesn't actually increase the water level of the ocean. Ocean remains steady. In the same way, the mind of a self-realized person, it is steady. Yeah. No. I can send you, you don't have to write everything, I can send this mega PDF and send it to you. Yeah, it's not a big issue. Yeah, I can send it. Yeah, it's not an issue. I can read everything. Well, I need somebody to type all the email addresses. So, you speak
Chinese.
So, another characteristic, that is the 71, I think. Can anyone read 71?
The person who has given up all desires for self gratification,
yeah,
lives free from desires.
Yeah.
Who has given up all sense for proprietorship and is devoid of all ego,
yeah,
alone can attain realization.
Exactly. The peace is coming from desirelessness, and Prabhu explains the desire for Krishna is desireless. What is desireless? Desire for Krishna.
Can you understand? Desireless means desire for Krishna, no problem. No material desire, but spiritual desire for Krishna.
And no sense of proprietorship means everything is owned by Krishna. In 5th chapter also we will see Bhoktanam Jagya Sabasam Sarva Roga Maheshwaram Subhudam Sarva Bhutanam Yatomam Shanti Prasthiti.
That is the peace formula. Srila Prabhupada calls 529 as the peace formula.
by understanding Krishna is the owner and the enjoyer of everything, then one becomes peaceful. Because one doesn't have to be agitated for one's own enjoyment. So one is peaceful. So the same thing we can see here also, the peace is coming because of non-proprietorship. Yeah. Okay. Wait.
From that point of not being affected by material desire, how can a devotee practice that from the society?
We are not yet self-realized. So that is the symptom. We can apply the same principle. Who is the that will not be affected? Why? What the basic? Why? How can one be unaffected by the material mode, material desire? How a devotee can be? Yeah, he is engaged in Krishna service. Say for instance, suppose if we have given all comfortable position, suppose ourselves, say place myself for instance, you know, very nice cushioned bed and, you know, nice air conditioning and eating, everything, all perfect situation and no tension, nothing, no pressure for service, there is no, you know, I had to do this, you know, nothing like that, you know, very easy life, nothing to do. Then what will happen to our mind? Or my mind? Completely, you know, it's completely not at all peaceful. Completely, not at all peaceful. So then our desires will just grow. It will go in all different directions. But when we have the engagement of in Krishna service, then we have actually there is some control. Then mind becomes peaceful. And then one becomes happy. So even though there are so many disturbances like that, but one is focused on one's service, then mind will calm down. That's the reason we have chanting and we have service. Part of chanting. Okay? Now we have a very quick quiz. Yeah.
How can we know if all of these are
we should consult with sadhu and chakra, not self. We have to consult with sadhu and chakra. Then we know whether it's sadhu or somebody else's or Krishna, so you know, what is. So we can take guidance from the devotees on a practical level.
There's no desire for Krishna, right?
Huh?
Desireless means.
Yeah, this is, at this point it has the quality that this person already has. But that we can see. Why we are presented with all these qualities and symptoms? Because then we can aspire for that. You understand what I mean? We are not yet there, so we can aspire for that. If we know the standard, then we can actually look up to that. And if we don't know, then where can we look at, you know? We can look at ourselves or down. Okay, we don't have time, we are running out of time, so we'll go to the group exercise. Six groups. 1, 2, 3, 1.